Right, welcome back to another episode of the NoFX Podcast. I'm your host, Islane. I'm joined by this guy over here, Kirk. And today we have something a little bit different. We kind of spitballed around doing some deck tech sort of podcast episodes. For those of you that are audio-only listeners, we will try to read off cards that we're talking about or, you know, anything like that so that you don't have to, like, pause and go look it up or just not know what we're talking about. I may put some card images up on the screen, too, for video listeners, but I'm not going to have the whole deck list out and all of that. But we were talking about something else. We couldn't remember what it was we had talked about potentially doing a deck on. And then I was like, you know, I've had this one list that's kind of popular. I've had it for a long time. Never done a deck on it. It was something that I kind of wanted to do at some point. And rather than being the guy that just sits here and drones on and on about my own thing, Kirk decided that he might do an interview of sorts kind of deal to where he asked me some questions about it. So we can get you can get more of my inner workings of how we got there, how the list is doing, how it's changed, those types of things. So without further ado, I'm going to shove it over to him and let him take over from here. But welcome back to the show.
The deep dive into the brain is Lane. Be prepared, everybody. It's going to get scary.
It's weird in there.
Obviously, the deck we're going to talk about today, it is Sithis Harvest's Hand. This is a deck, for those of you that don't know, Islane has a deck on the CEDH decklist database that is, I don't know how you want to describe it. It's just a decklist. It's a database that's comprised of decks that are approved by individuals. I don't know the ins and outs of it. Islane, that might be something we get into here. But it's a great starting point if you're kind of getting into the format or just need a refresher or want to see what other brewers are doing. These are lists that are vetted somewhat, so you know that they are at least capable and can do the thing, as they like to say. So without further ado, what was your initial draw or your appeal for Sithis? Like, what kind of tripped your trigger to make you want to build Sithis?
So if you want to go into history deep dive, the first precon I ever bought was Daxos the Returned, which I think it was the 2015 set. He and the others in that set of, I think it was five commander decks, all had the experience counter mechanic, which was, it's only been used a couple more times since then. Daxos was the enchantress of it all. And enchantress is basically a deck that cares about enchantments. There have been lots of enchantresses that gets its namesake from, like Mesa Enchantress or Argothian Enchantress. There's several of them. And basically they're all, whenever you cast an enchantment spell, draw a card. There's like three or four. There's a satyr. There's quite a few of them. And this one, most of them are green or white. In the case of the particular precon that I'm talking about, it didn't really focus on the card draw aspect of it. It came out around a time when it wasn't too far after like the first visit to Theros, so like enchantment creatures became a thing, so there were a lot of enchantment creatures in the deck, and the commander himself was like, cast an enchantment, get an experience counter, and then he had an activated ability that created an enchantment creature spirit that had plus X, or its power toughness was equal to the number of experience counters you had. So theoretically, you could play out a bunch of enchantments, get a bunch of experience counters, and then shit out these, because it wasn't like a tap ability, it was like one in Orzhov, like so three mana, shit out like a 6/6. They didn't have evasion, they didn't have anything fancy. There were a few times where I actually managed to pull it off pretty well to where I had a huge board of them, but it was a very casual list. I did eventually try to make it a little more competitive, but it just never wasn't really ever good enough. But it did kind of get the gears turning as far as like I like the Enchantress theme. So at some other point in time, I think it was the Estrid precon, which was Bant, and it came with the Merfolk Tuvasa in it, which she was kind of like the precursor to Sithis in a way. She was three colors, so she did have the addition of blue and God. If Sithis was Bant, this deck would be probably a hell of a lot better, but still not to say that it's bad, but just adding blue and being able to have counter spells would make it a lot spicier, I think. But anyhow, She had the weird caveat that you only got to draw off the first enchantment you cast each turn. So you couldn't just make stormy turns, draw out your deck. You couldn't do anything like that because of that limitation. So there was never a point where it felt like the theme or archetype or whatever you want to call it was good enough. But I was always kind of on the lookout for that. And then Modern Horizons 2, I think it was when she came out. Yeah, 2. she got spoiled, and as soon as I saw her, I was like, this is good, because what do we want in the command zone from our commanders? We want either card draw or an outlet, right? Basically, that's like the bare minimum. I mean, she's also 2 mana, so very easy to cast either turn 1 or 2. And then she also, weirdly enough, gains you life for every enchantment. So that's not nothing. It can help you stabilize in longer games, especially if you're getting hit with stuff or getting drained out by various effects. It can just kind of help you stay in the game. You're not like beefing up to have a big ad nos, but honestly, you're not using your life at all. But, you know, just staying healthy. I used to be on Sylvan Liber at some point, so your life would matter a little bit more, but I cut that at some point because it didn't seem necessary. Whatever the case, I saw her when she was spoiled, and I was like, I'm going to build this. And so, of course, my first thought was get all of those enchantresses together, slam them all in the same deck so you can get her out and multiple of them, and then every enchantment you cast, you're drawing 3 or 4 cards. But that ends up being kind of a lot of setup and not necessarily the thing that you need to be doing, especially because most CDH decks are like less about building engines like that and more about just getting to your win cons and winning. So that was kind of where it was at. It was like, how do we build this in a way to where we're going to get to our win cons? What are our win cons? Those types of things. And then it was just being in the tank and, you know, testing it out and also talking with people. And
I was going to say, so did you find yourself like kind of on that initial build, the problem of having a handful of enchantments because you were drawing constantly, but then not having a way to turn the corner and win, basically?
I don't even think I started with all of them. I think I only started with like a couple besides the commander. And then it was, I don't even know if I play tested it at that point. It was just like on paper, looking at it and being like, these don't seem necessary, because as I found more and more ways to get to win cons, it was like the digging is fine, but like really it's not the end goal. It's more like you're just digging to find a tutor or digging to find your other piece, because maybe you mulligan into one of your pieces. And again, there's a lot of different combos that are sort of, not layered, but like piece one, you can get piece two by going this route. You know, a lot of that different, like finding the avenues to victory is a lot of different two-card win cons, and or some of the stuff that you can do in the deck requires more than just two cards, can require, you know, up to 3 or 4, but they're like pieces you get over time. And also kind of some of it is more of like a backup plan, so to speak. I don't know. I just kind of, I remember, so I first started building and I showed it to some people. People were like, yeah, it looks like it could be good. And then I actually went on to the CDH subreddit, which is kind of not directly involved with the database, but like some of the people that are involved there are also involved with the database, like curation or whatever. So I got in there and I kind of started having some conversations with people, and other people were hyped about it too. And I think there's an Enchantress Discord you can go on if you go onto the database. I'm pretty sure it's linked there, but I never got on there, but I just like kind of had some conversations on there, and it was like, oh, you know, there's things that we can do here to perhaps make, you know, infinite mana. And then with Sith Assess the outlet, draw our deck out. So like there's cards like Flickering Ward and then Whip Silk are the two that you can play in these colors, and they both cost a single mana to play. They're an aura. They have various effects which don't really matter, but just for the sake of argument, Flickering Ward is a 1 white. When it ETBs, you choose a color, and the enchanted creature gains protection from the color. This can actually be useful in some cases, because you know you might be worried about your commander getting, you know, removed or another piece, whatever the case may be. But then it also has a clause, pay a white, return it to your hand. So if, say, you did give Sith this pro black, and then somebody goes to bounce it with a blue spell, you can still return this ward to your hand so that you don't lose it. So it is kind of a nice recursive thing. Whip Silk is the same idea, but it's 1 green, and it gives the creature reach, which in most cases these creatures are small, so maybe giving him reach isn't great. But then again, you might have a Krom coming at you, and maybe you have something like a Yasharn, and you throw it on Yasharn, and now maybe the Krom doesn't swing at you because it's going to be a trade and they don't want to.
Fair.
It also has the clause, 1 green, return it to your hand. So with those, in conjunction with Sithis, you can already see where pay a mana, draw a card, gain a life, pay a mana, return it, pay a mana, draw a card, gain a life, maybe you get something else, play that instead. So you can get to a point where if you can make infinite mana, you can use these infinitely to draw your deck, and then you can do something like play all your creatures, infinite finale of devastation, go for the win. And lots of decks win with that very same idea. So that's kind of where the idea went to, like, make it kind of a stormy list. And I'm all about storm and being able to storm off and do stuff like that. So it kind of just evolved from there. And then it was just, you know, recognizing what sort of combos there are out there. And then just piecing it together and testing a lot of stuff. And then lots of new enchantments are printed all the time. So then it's just, what can we put in? We see something new that comes out, like, oh, that's really good, we should find a spot for it. Then it's finding a cut, and that's probably the most difficult thing of curating a deck like this, because to stay on the database, you have to have updated within, I think it's 6 months. So,
okay.
It's been on the database since Spoiled, basically, so at least a couple years, maybe at this point. But yeah, once you've gotten it on the database, then there's kind of the requirement to continue to update it. So, you know, I have a primer on there, and I think I need to update it because I've updated the list recently, but I try to keep it up to date as best I can, amongst all the other billion lists that I have. But this one being, quote unquote, the most important, because it is somewhere where people are looking at it all the time, and it is potentially giving inspiration. There's a couple other people that have the list on the database too, besides myself, and their lists are different enough to be on there as well. So they may have a different sort of direction that they wanted to go. But for me, it was kind of that. And then, you know, to get to the infinite mana, to use what I was just describing with those enchantments, there's cards like the Sanctum Weaver, which is basically just Sarah Sanctum on a body. It's a one and a green. It's an 0/2. It taps for X of any one color, where X is the number of enchantments you control. So if you can get out 3 or 4 cheap enchantments, you tap this, you're making 4 mana, you're paying 1 to draw, and then paying 1 to return, and then paying 1 to draw, but you're getting multiples that way. And then there's
that's there. Sanctum Weaver is an enchantment itself as well, right? So when you cast,
it's an enchantment
creature.
Draw
with this? Yeah.
But then there are a couple enchantments. So like an enchantment like Gauntlets of Light. So it's 2 and a white for an aura. Enchant creature gets +0/+2, which doesn't matter. It signs combat damage equal to its toughness rather than its power. Still doesn't matter. The part that matters is enchanted creature has 2 and a white, untap this creature. So as long as you're able to make, you need to be able to make 4 mana with your Sanctum Weaver, then you untap and you have that floating mana. You rinse, repeat until you have infinite mana. And it is of only one color, but in both cases, either the Whip Silk or the Ward, you either need white or green. But if you do, for some reason, need both, you can just untap and then decide to tap for the other color. You can make infinite both colors. Doesn't matter. So if you have the Flickering Ward, let's say, on Sithis, and then you have this aura on your Sanctum Weaver, you have, you know, other enchantments out to do the thing.
That'd be 4 right there, right?
Oh, yeah, because Sithis, the Sanctum, and then the aura, yeah, both, that's enough to do it by itself. You tap it, you make your mana, you make your loop, you untap, tap, and make your infinite mana, and then you go to the bouncing and replaying of the enchantments, you draw your deck, you do the finale of devastation thing, boom. So that's like the most convoluted sort of line, and obviously you can do the same thing with either a Gaia's Cradle or Sarah's Sanctum. But in both of those cases, it takes one extra step where you have your Destiny Spinner, which is a 1 and a green, 2/3. It's also enchantment creature, but it's a human, which is weird. but it says a creature enchantment spells your control can't be countered, but it also has 3 and a green. Target land you control becomes an XX elemental creature, blah, blah, blah. The only part of that matters is that now you make your either Gaia's Cradle or your Sarah's Sanctum into a creature for the turn, and you attach the Gauntlets of Light to it, and then it's still the same sort of thing where as long as you have enough creatures or enchantments, you're now tapping and untapping it. However, Gaia's Cradle doesn't work so well because this does require white. I digress. Either way, there's a few different ways to do that, but again, that is the most convoluted way to win the game. What's better is to try and find one of the several couple card win cons. You can also do the Swift Druid thing, which is the Devoted Druid, which has the it taps for a green, but then you can put a neg one counter on it to untap it. If you use the enchantment Swift Reconfiguration on it, It becomes an artifact, so it cannot die to that clause. So you can put as many... It'll die if the thing gets removed, but you can basically just tap and untap it for infinite green. So you could do the Whip Silk thing on our girl and draw the deck that way, and then with the infinite green can still do the finale. So that one's a pretty easy two-card win con. You do obviously need the additional enchantment, but we do have things to tutor that kind of stuff up. I am running the Moonblessed Cleric, which is kind of a Enlightened Tutor effect. I am running the Enlightened Tutor. I think those are the only couple. There's Open the Armory,
Sterling
too.
Sterling Grove, I suppose, right?
Sterling Grove can be used for it, too, yes. That's an enchantment.
I do have a quick question on Swift Reconfiguration on Devoted Druid. Correct me if I'm wrong. If you cast both on the same turn, you cast your Devoted Druid, it enters as a creature, it has summoning sickness, but then you cast Swift Reconfiguration on it, it becomes a vehicle, it would no longer have summoning sickness, so you could activate it right away. Is that correct?
To my knowledge, artifacts don't have summoning sickness. It's just that they... I think when you crew a vehicle, it can't attack. I don't think it would be able to attack, but you could still tap it because it's just an artifact. To my knowledge, that's a good question. I don't know for sure. I would assume that it's correct that it doesn't have the summoning sickness. I think there is some weird rule with vehicles. I believe that if it's a turn they're played, if you turn them into a creature, they still recognize it's the turn they were played, so they're still summoning sick. Okay. But I also believe that you can crew a creature, even if it was summoning sick, as we're saying. I believe you can crew to block, regardless. But I'm not an expert, and we don't really use vehicles a whole ton. So I believe you're correct, but I am not entirely sure.
That works. I'd have to check with the judge to make sure, but I'm 95% sure that works. So that's kind of a cool, like, infinite green mana out of nowhere. I have another question. There's another one that's kind of a unique one that you don't really see in any other lists. Talking about all of your combos. Is it Sionia, Captain of the...
Pileus, yeah.
Pileus? Okay. There you go.
This
one.
This is another two-card combo that's weird. The only reason I know about it is because I was playing heavily when the Return to Theros happened. And she was a deck for like a hot minute. And then kind of just fell out of favor. I think because like... Winota or something came like shortly thereafter and it was like, okay, this is better, or whatever the case may be. I just remember that it was, I don't know if it was on the database or just Brewer's Corner or whatever, you know, where it's on there for a little bit and then it disappears. I just remember people talking about it, and I played against it like once or twice. But basically, so Sionia is one, a green and a white for 2/2 legendary human soldier. When it ETBs, look at the top 7 cards of your library. You can reveal an aura from among them, put it in your hand, put the rest on the bottom. When an aura you control becomes attached to a creature you control, you create a 1/1 human soldier token. So people figured out pretty early that with Shielded by Faith, you can make an infinite combo here. So Shielded by Faith is a 1/2 white for an aura. It says enchant creature. Enchanted creature has indestructible. When a creature enters the battlefield, you may attach this to that creature. So basically what happens is you play Sionia, and I've actually had this happen, which... is one of those spicy things that can happen once in a while. I've actually played her, and the Shielded by Faith was in the top 7. So I got to just put it in my hand and just go. So basically, you look at the top 7, 95% of the time, we are running like 3 or 4, maybe 5 auras. So there is a good small percentage chance that you know, maybe like 15% or something chance that you get an aura in this. So she can be kind of value in that sense, card advantage kind of. But most of the time, you're tutoring for her, you're tutoring for the other piece, or whatever. But so you play her, you look, you get something, or you don't. That either goes in your hand, or all the cards go on the bottom. She's there. Then you cast Shielded by Faith. It attaches to her. And as soon as it attaches to her, it says, oh, look, an aura attached to a creature I control, so make a 1/1. Then Shielded by Faith triggers and goes, oh, look, a 1/1 came into the battlefield. I can move this over to. I can be moved to it. So you move it to it, and then it's attached. Sionia triggers again. New 1/1. You move it over. New 1/1. Move it over. New 1/1. So on and so forth until you decide to stop. You know, it just stays on the last one, I guess, because you can't move it after that. So yeah, it's just the last one is now indestructible. The only issue is there's no haste. So I am running Concordant Crossroads, which is a 1-mana enchantment that just says, you know, creatures have haste. But it's not asymmetric. It's symmetrical, so the whole table has that. So playing that down early before you're using it on a combo turn is a bad idea. This card a lot of times will just rot in your hand, and it sucks that it is what it is, but It also can be useful in the sense of, like, maybe you have all the pieces, but you throw it down, and then you throw down your Sanctum Weaver, and now your Sanctum Weaver has haste, and you just go ham and win anyway. So it can be used in a number of different ways, but it's risky, so I don't ever play it unless I have a way to potentially try and win. But yeah, okay. So that's where the piece is. A lot of times with it, if you don't have the crossroads, you just do it. You pass turn, you hope nobody kills your combos off, and then you swing out with infinite 1-1s to win anyway. And there's times where people are just like, I don't got nothing, pass, I don't got nothing, pass, 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 and you just get the win anyway. It's not great to do that, but it is possible.
That's kind of a cool win. I do like that. Like you said, it sucks a little bit that you have to have haste, but I also notice you have a few stacks piece like enchantments in here, like Root Maze, which is an interesting one. You have, obviously, the Rest in Peace, the Stony Silence. So would you say this is more of a mid-range, kind of a stacks mid-range build, or a hybrid of that, or how would you describe it?
So it probably plays like most mid-range decks, because it can't really threaten a super early win unless you get just the right thing at just the right time. So it would probably be considered, like, I have it labeled as a combo deck, I have it labeled as a stacks deck, I have it labeled as a storm deck, because it is all of those things. But it's light stacks. It's not like we're not running Winter Orbs or any of that kind of shit. We're not running Rule of Law, because we are stormy and we don't want to have to worry about that. But we are running pretty much all the premium artifact hate, because, you know, what wins a lot of games? Docksides and other shit, right? So it hoses anything that's an artifact strategy. We've got the pieces like Rest in Peace that hose graveyard strategies, which I'm not doing recursive things. So, yeah, I mean, I am running Hall of Heliod's Generosity. So, I mean, if I don't have a Rest in Peace and somebody kills one of my enchantments that's important, I can get it back. But outside of that, we don't really care. But the majority of the stacks package is artifact hate. So we've got the Collector Oof, which is the standard. It's a 2-mana 2/2 bear that just says artifacts can't be used. We've got the newer Dauntless Dismantler, which just made its way into the list recently, which is basically like Blind Obedience, which is also in the list. So both of those make it to where artifacts and creatures enter the battlefield tapped. So even if somebody does drop a big-ass Dockside, those treasures are coming in tapped. And then, worst case, I can pay white, sack this guy, and just blow up all the zero drops, so that's all your treasures gone. We're on Dranith, because you're in white, and why not? Mm-hmm. If you can stop a commander from coming in, that's great. Boromir is kind of a stacks piece, too. He's also newer. If you're not familiar, he's a 2 and a white for a 3/3 with Vigilance. Whenever opponents cast a spell, if no mana was spent to cast it, you counter the spell. So if somebody's paying, this shuts down Mental Missteps. If they can't pay the actual mana and they pay the life, it shuts down all the free counter spells. It shuts down all the other free interaction. But it does have the clause that you can sack him to give your creatures indestructible, and the ring tempts you, which none of that really matters. The point here is that you can be keeping people from interacting with your stuff, but then if there is a thing where somebody's about to win and somebody's like, hey, I got this free Force of Will, but I can't use it because your thing, I can go, okay, I'll sack him, and then they can stop the win, and hopefully that gets us to where we can win. Not a stacks piece, but I'm running the Lauren of the Third Path, which is just an ETB blow up an artifact or enchantment, which can be good. It also does have a weird clause where you can tap it and make you and an opponent draw a card, so it is a thing where you can fuck up somebody who just dropped a Thoracle and make them lose the game. Yasharn, kind of a big one. He's a 4/4 ETBs. You get a forest and a plains. I am running a couple basics each just for him, basically. But it says players can't pay life or sacrifice non-land permanents to cast spells or activate abilities. So this shuts off some of the life-paying lands, so you can't make them, you know, you can't use them for mana. But it basically, you know, it makes it to where people can't sack treasures, they can't sack creatures to do things for, like, deadly disputes or whatever. Like, it shuts off a lot of stuff. Yasharn's a pretty big, beefy beater, too, so not terrible. Yeah,
shutting off fetch lands is kind of gross, right?
Right. And then the grandmother of them all, Elish Norn, OG, 4/7 Vigilance. Your creatures get +2/+2, your creatures your opponents control get -2/-2. That can often be enough to close out a game, because you killed enough small things, or you made things that are big small, and now your stuff's big, and you start putting in some beat down.
There's one stacks piece I kind of like in here that you don't really see in any other list, I don't believe, and that's the Aura of Silence.
Yes, I enjoy it. It's another piece of hate that's also removal. It's one and two white for an enchantment. It says artifact enchantment spells my opponent's cast costs two more to cast, so it's a little bit of a tax on everybody else's stuff. I also like, which I'm not running here, I think it's like dissipation field or something field, where it makes activated ability. Field. Yeah, it makes activated abilities cost two more. I don't think I don't have it in here, and I don't think that there's really any reason why I couldn't be running it. Just never.
You can shut off the Gauntlets of Light combo. It'd make it cost a lot more to activate, right?
Right. So, I mean, it would hurt me in some ways. And to that note, you know, stuff like Root Maze does hurt me, but I found that slowing down the game to just draw more cards before everybody else kind of works. Like a turn one Root Maze, if you're on the play and you turn one Forest Root Maze, everybody's just like, can't do shit, and you're just ahead for the rest of the game unless they can blow it up or somehow otherwise ramp into stuff. It's really nice. The Paladin class, not really a stacks piece, but it does make spells cost one more. It's another one of those Grand Abolisher type effects that kind of help us to do our thing without getting messed with. The Rest in Peace just exiles all graveyards, and then if any graveyard, anything would go to a grave, it just gets exiled instead. Stony Silence is basically the enchantment version of Collector Oof, so it just makes artifacts not be able to be activated. You got the Art of Silence. Yeah, so that's it. That's it. It's like, again, it's a lot of just artifact hate and otherwise really good pieces that don't really affect us all that much. So seems to be good enough to slow things down to help us get to those combos. The only combo that I haven't touched on yet to this point is there's this cool spell that you probably haven't seen before, and this is the only deck I play it in. Some people may know it, you may not. It's called Congregation at Dawn. It's an instant that costs two green and a white, so you can do this on somebody's end step to make sure that your turn goes the way you want it to. And it says, search your library for up to three creature cards, reveal them, shuffle, put these on top. So you basically go get a pile of Walking Ballista, Heliod, and your Destiny Spinner. So you do this on the guy before your end step. These get put on your thing. So you go move to turn and you draw the Destiny Spinner. Then you play the Destiny Spinner, and you need to have Sithis out for this to really work the way I want it to. So the Destiny Spinner is an enchantment creature. So you cast it, trigger Sithis, you draw your next card, which is Heliod. Heliod the Sun Crown specifically. So he's two and a white for a god. He's not a creature or whatever. He just has this clause at the end that says, pay one and a white, another target creature you control gains life to the end of turn. That's the part that matters. So you play him out. Well, he's an enchantment, so you trigger Sithis, and now you draw your Walking Ballista. Now from there,
he's uncounterable, huh?
Yes. Because you've already played the Destiny Spinner, he is uncounterable. Yeah, so basically the Destiny Spinner is your protection. Although you might already have out Grand Abolisher or something. But in this case, it's just their enchantment creatures that trigger Sithis to draw all the pieces at once. The problem is that it's two mana for the Destiny Spinner. It's three more mana, so you're up to five for Heliod. You have to pay four mana for the Walking Ballista because you need it to come in with two counters on it. Because if you have just one and you go to remove it, it just dies. So you have to have the extra counter. So you're up to nine mana there. And then you need two more mana for the activation of Heliod targeting the Walking Ballista to give it lifelink, so that when you remove the counter, you ping something, you gain a life, you put a counter back on it, and then you just continue a loop to kill the entire table. So it's 11 mana, so it's not exactly cheap. However, I found that even though I'm on 26 lands, I'm on a ton of dorks and a lot of different ways we've already explained on how to make lots of mana, so I've never felt that that was too much. It's worked out really well for me in the past. I've won with that combo lots of times. But if you don't have the combo, you can just get the Heliod and the Ballista. You don't have to have the Destiny Spinner. It's just a protected way to get it done. A lot of these combos are just kind of little packages, and you have plenty of creature tutors and enchantment tutors and ways to go find these pieces. So not to mention you're hopefully drawing lots of cards throughout a game. So finding and piecing together these things is not too terribly difficult.
So have you ever run into a situation where you've got the Walking Ballista win, but you're getting shot off by your own Collector Oof or Stony Silence?
Yes. So you were, prior to us talking about this, you had said, was there a time that I could think of like a really spicy win? Mm-hmm. I had the Stony Silence out, but I'm running these two other enchantments, along with other stuff we've already talked about, where you can remove enchantments. Well, I'm running two enchantments. One is Seal of Cleansing and the other is Seal of Primordium. They're the same exact thing, except for one's white, one's green. They both cost two. They both sit on the battlefield for as long as you want. And whenever you want, you can sack them to destroy artifact or enchantment. Notably, Aura of Silence also has that clause. It makes stuff more expensive, but you can sacrifice it any time to destroy an artifact or enchantment. We're also running Nature's Claim. Quite a few other cards. Soul Partition works. There's like quite a few cards that will just get rid of a thing. There's a few other ways to just blow up something that might be hurting you. So I had sort of I got the Siona win, essentially. But it wasn't even Walking Ballista. I think it was Siona. And I don't remember what it was that was shutting me off from being able to do it, but I managed to use one of the seals to blow up the thing that was stopping me from doing what I wanted to do, so that I could then go ahead and do the Siona thing. And then I managed to either draw into or had the tutor for, or I think I sacked my Sterling Grove to then go get the Concordant and then just play the Concordant and won. I've also had times where I did have the Oof or the Stony Silence out, and you can use one of these pieces to remove it so that you can go for your win.
I kind of like that with your Oof, you've also got these weird aura that you don't also see often, like Darksteel Mutation, Reprobation, and Kenrith's Transformation. So they look like removal that draw you a card with your commander, but it also shut that off if you need it, right? That's kind of bizarre. Yeah,
you can. It's not, that hasn't come up, but I do run those because there's a lot of commanders out there that are like centric to the command to that particular deck. And hitting the commander with a removal spell just means it's coming back. It may not come back, you know, this turn. It may not come back till next turn or a turn later because they need more mana. But if you put a Darksteel Mutation on a Krom or a Timna, it's just sitting there. And it can't do shit. And it loses all of its abilities. Same with Kenrith's. In Kenrith's, it becomes a 3-3. So sometimes that can be detrimental because it might just beat your face for a while. But, you know, it is what it is. And then the Reprobation is also just makes it into 2-0-1. So I like those cards because they're cheap. They draw me cards. In the case of Kenrith, I get two cards if a Sithis is out. They're not bad. They're good forms of removal without having to run. Because the reason we're running dumb stuff like this is because they're enchantments. So they give me cantrips, but then they also are removal. And some of them are removal that you just play out and people go, well, I can't play into this. The only thing that sucks about them is that a lot of them are destroy. And in a the One Ring world, we need more ways to exile things. So that is something I've been considering as far as like being able to maybe find some more things that exile, because like even Nature's Claim is destroy. Soul Partition works, but like they'll just recast it.
I was actually going to ask you, so two questions. One, is there any particular reason there's a card, and I cannot think of me for the life of what the hell it is. You can channel with it, touch the spirit realm. Is there any reason that you haven't put that in here, or has that been something you've tried yet, or has it been in and out for consideration?
It's on my considering. I have just not put it in yet. I have done a lot of stuff with this over the course of time. I am running Besage You, but that's still just destroy. I don't think touch is bad. I think it's really good. You don't get the trigger if you channel it, but that's usually just to get rid of a thing. It's also, you know, the exact thing that would also help with an Oof or whatever. You just bounce it, and then it's gone, and then you go to town. We can talk about changeless stuff at some point here, but yeah, touch is definitely on my considering. The problem I've found is that I want more enchantments in the list, but finding a way to cut the creatures has been difficult because just so many good creatures keep coming out that are like good, and I want them in the list because they do a certain thing, and then there's like, okay, a certain amount of, I won't go below the 25 enchantments that are in here, but I probably should be floating closer to like 30 just to have a better density. But then it's like, gotcha. What spells do I cut? I'm already down to 26 lands. Probably can't go much lower than that. I'm not on rocks. So like, that's a thing too. For a while I was on a few rocks, but I recently cut them because I was like, you know, outside of, she's a 2-pip, 2-mana commander. So like, yes, Mana Crypt pays for her later with attacks, but like, do I really need a Mana Crypt? Like, most of my stuff doesn't even, like, 2-colorless is pretty much the limit of what, you know, is on the CMCs of most of my spells. I've got a lot of 1-drops and 2-drops in here to where why do I even need a Soul Ring? Because it's not really... Yes, it could be the difference between casting one and two spells. I get that. But at the same time, I'm putting so much effort into shutting artifacts off that, like, why bother?
Yeah, that totally makes sense. So is there a specific... So you're kind of talking about more exiles. Is there, like, a specific wish list or a card that you're hoping Commander sets come out with, or Wizards just goes off their freaking gourd and prints that would really propel this up another notch? Is there, like, a creature or an enchantment or something strange that you've kind of daydreamed up that might be the key to this deck if it ever happens?
So the deck itself, as it stands, can sit toe-to-toe with most of the high-end decks. I've played it against Blue Farm and stuff. Like, you can still win. It's just a matter of, do you get the right stacks pieces down at the right time to stop the right things? Do you have the right interaction at the right time? Are you outdrawing and outvaluing everybody to get to your pieces faster than them, or slowing them down so that you can get there? There's a lot of variables, and that is just kind of the lower color, not in blue, not in Grixis, basically. If you're not in Grixis, like, you are going slower than everybody else, so it is a matter of trying to figure out how to slow them down, how to speed yourself up. In the case of this deck, it goes pretty quick. It can get some earlier turn wins, but it's just a matter of, you know, do you get the right pieces? Outside of them printing, you know, a green or white Dockside or a green or white Thassa's Oracle, we're probably always going to be kind of behind. And that's kind of just the way it is.
I wish that when I'm looking back at, like, the Fierce Guardianship, the Deflecting Swat, and the Deadly Rollick, and then you have the green and white ones. It's like, come on, Wizards, give us a break. That the colors that needed it the most, they could have helped it. Yeah.
We also don't need, what is it, like, an anthem or something stupid? Like, it's I don't even remember,
like,
what
exiles
it
exiles or protects your stuff, makes it indestructible or something. Which,
yeah, just not good. Just not good. Yeah. I mean, they did give us some cool stuff, like the Teferi's Protection, but, like, honestly, that's... I'd rather just run the One Ring at this point, which, yeah, I almost, sure, considered putting in here, too, because it is just really good card draw, but then there's the whole I'm running all this artifact hate, so maybe it's not worth it. But, like I said, I think there needs to be more pieces, which kind of leads us, I guess, into the considering list that I have right now, because there are a couple cards that may help push this up a little bit. Touch the Spirit Realm being one of them, where you can just exile a One Ring, which is pretty good. But one that we just talked about in our last episode was Unexplained Absence. So it's the 3 and a white for an instant for each player, exile up to one target non-land permanent that player controls, and for each permanent exiled this way, its controller cloaks the top card of their library. So in this case, you could target a One Ring, and it's actually exiled, and you don't have to worry about it coming back, because unlike Soul Partition, it's not something where they just pay two more to play it. In this case, it's just gone. And like we said before, maybe you cloak something that just, you know, doesn't matter, or it does matter, and now they can't cast it, because it can only get flipped if it's a creature. So that one feels like it's going to be pretty good. I'm also considering the Trouble in Pairs, which is kind of a catch-up mechanic, which we get a lot in white, but this one is, like, the best that they've printed so far in the sense of card draw. So it's,
yeah, people are calling it the White Crom. It doesn't beat down White Crom in the air, but it sure probably draws a lot of cards.
Well, so, I mean, I've already put in the Esper's in here, and we are running Archivist of Ogma, so there are some pieces that are card draw engines. And with my commander being just a card draw engine by itself, there hasn't been a need, which is why I ended up cutting Sylvan Library and some other stuff like that, because, you know, it felt almost win more. Like, I mean, sure, those cards are great, and maybe I should be running them, but I just at some point was like, I don't really need this, so I just cut it. But Trouble in Pairs feels like one that might make the case to be put in, because it's 2 and 2 white, and it says an opponent would begin an extra turn, that player skips that turn instead, so... That part not really relevant, but could be. You know, it does hose a Final Fortune player. More importantly, whenever an opponent attacks with two or more creatures, attacks you. So it kind of gives you, like, pseudo protection in that way too. People may avoid attacking you because they don't want you to draw cards. Or anytime they're drawing two cards, so if they've got a Rhystic, a Mystic, an Esper, whatever the fuck, they're going to draw an extra card every turn, so you're going to draw a card. And then if they cast two or more spells, you're drawing a card. So in a Counterspell War, you're probably drawing 3 or 4 cards. If there's Rhystic out, maybe you're drawing 6, 7 cards just because you put this card out. Not to mention, you're likely to get a card draw off of it just because you played it because you have Sithis on the field. So it feels like a shoe-in for the deck, and it may be one of the things that help push it over the top. I think that a lot of the stuff that's come out in the last couple years have kind of helped this deck push along. I did put in cards like the Kutzil, which you know, is just another Grand Abolisher, but also has card draw stapled to it if you happen to have some way to buff up your creatures, which I really don't, but...
Well, I saw you had the... What's that white enchantment that also gives your legends...
The Flowering. Yeah, Flowering of the White Tree. This one is one of those cards that we talked about in the set review, and we're like, eh, this probably doesn't have a place anywhere. But I was like, you know, I feel like this goes into Sithis because it's only 2 mana. It draws you a card off of her. It gives her +2/+1 in Ward 1, so she becomes a 3/3 because she's a 1/2 base. So her being a 3/3 with Ward 1 is actually a lot better. It actually makes it to where maybe you start attacking with her. And then it also gives all your non-legendary creatures +1/+1. So yeah, this in conjunction with Kutzil means anything that hits draws you a card. At least up to 3. So that's kind of cool. I didn't even think about that interaction. And then I also added in the Elavir. I built a deck with her by herself, but she's 4 mana, 4/4. But when she enters the battlefield or attacks, you make a Virtuous Roll token, which is an enchantment. So that does bump up your Sanctum Weaver and your Sarah's Sanctum counts. But also gives a buff to where that creature gets +1/+1 for each enchantment you control. So that also thereby synergizes with Kutzil, but then can potentially just make some big-ass creatures. But then on top of that, whenever the enchanted creatures deal combat damage to a player, you draw a card. So there's a lot of layering here where different. If you can get some of these cards out all at the same time, you can have like a lot of different things that are triggering, that are drawing you cards, on top of casting things that are drawing you cards, on top of just making threats that aren't normally there. And these cards just came out in like the last year. So they're not like old weird tech that we forgot about. Like, these all just came out, and putting them in here has made it feel a little more solid. So I think it's just, it's a matter of fine-tuning over time. I do have like Doorkeeper Thrall on my considering, but there are a few impactful ETBs that I have that I may or may not want this. I'm also not running Torpor Orb or any of the other creatures that do that, because I didn't want this to turn into a full-on stacks list, because I'm trying to keep some of the combo pieces intact, and then, you know, ramp and just other interaction that helps you stay in a competitive game. So
completely makes sense. So I got a good one for you. Being that we're in March now and we're approaching March Madness, for all the college basketball fans out there, they always talk about the bubble watch. You know, what are the teams that are possibly making it in? What are the last 4 teams that got in that didn't get out at the end of it, the bubble watch? So what would you say, what are your last 2 cards? We'll go with 2. The last 2 cards you think that are in the list that are kind of teeter-tottering of, they might be bumped out on the bubble and be replaced with, you know, a new contender.
So, I mean, we just talked about some of the cards I just put in, and then we have the couple cards that I want to put in. At least 3 of these that are on the considering I want to find a spot for. So what comes out? So, I mean, going in would be the Touch the Spirit Realm, the Trouble in Paris, the Unexplained Absence. Coming out, I mean, might be something as dumb as, like, the Nature's Claim. Because as much as I like the Nature's Claim, there's a 1-mana, you know, blow up a thing. We already have, you know, several other ways to do that. Do I really need that? I don't know. Autumn's Veil is another consideration. I do like Veil of Summer better. I just was running both as additional protection, so it is something that could go. Even March of Otherworldly Light, like, it's fine, but I think Soul Partition's better, and I think it could be just replaced by Unexplained Answers, because you're more than likely paying... You're either exiling a bunch of shit from your hand, or you're paying quite a bit of mana anyway for March. And March is, you know, it's exile, which is great. So, I mean, I guess in that regard, it does still hit the One Rings and things. But it is mana value X or less. So you're either, you know, exiling the cards pays for 2. So, like, you're either paying 1 white and exiling a card. That gets you to 3 CMC. But it's actually only 2. So you've got to discard at least 2 cards plus pay a mana to hit a One Ring. So you're either, or you're having to pay the extra 4 mana, which is the same cost as the Unexplained Absence, but this is going to hit that guy's ring, plus that guy's Ristic, plus that guy's Commander, all at the same time. And then that just feels better. So maybe that's probably the cut. I think March might go for this Unexplained Absence. But really, that's where I'm looking the most, is just at my Instants and Sorceries, because it's like the the amount and what I have in the enchantments, like, it really can't go lower. I'd actually prefer it goes higher. So again, if we're making cuts, it's probably something else. But then I want to have the interaction on the stack too, so it's kind of a rough go. But then pretty much every creature that's here, like, I can make an argument to maybe get rid of Moonbless Cleric. Isn't the greatest tutor, but I don't have a ton of the tutors for the enchantments either. Lauren is kind of whatever too, but I kind of like having that gotcha moment of, oh, I cast a creature, I blow up your thing, and I also have this ability to, like, hose a Thassa player.
I was curious if you think, with all the draw engines, I mean, I know it'd be specifically dependent on your commander being in play, but if she's not in play, Archivist of Ogma feels pretty great, but if she is in play, do you need Archivist of Ogma for the extra draw? I don't know. I haven't played the list, obviously, so.
Yeah, I mean, I couldn't say either. I don't know if I've actually cast Archie since I've been there. I just like the, I get to draw cards off shit you're doing. Like, drawing cards off of what I'm doing is great, but, like, if I don't have a combo or I don't have a way to get to combo, then it's just flat card draw for casting things, which is fine. But, like, also getting card draw for, like, you doing things and me maybe holding on to pieces to have for my turn to go off harder or whatever. Like, you know what I mean? Like, I don't know. That's, again, where the Trouble in Paris comes in. Maybe we do cut Archie, because Trouble in Paris is coming in and it's just going to do more work than Archie. That's kind of
the deck brewer is trying and testing and reverting back if it's broken or if it doesn't work, or yeah, finding secret tech. Yeah, it's always the fun part and the labor of love, right?
Yeah, I mean, I would say probably on the bubble at most, probably the Archie, and again, maybe the Moonbless Cleric or the Lauren. Also, the March probably goes. The Nature's Claim could probably go, but I definitely want to try and jam in these couple extra cards. I also have Avacyn's Pilgrim on, considering, because it was like one I could have had in. I could potentially just cut one of the elves to put it in its place just to have another dork that makes white mana. But when you look at the... Yeah, actually, if you look at the split, I actually do have more white than green in the list, surprisingly. Which in any deck with green, usually that's the opposite. So,
right, yeah.
there just happens to be a lot of white tools that do stuff for this list in particular. So, yeah, I don't know. I'd say that's probably the biggest bubble. And like I said, there might be some other stuff too that I need to look into as far as like just plain out exile. Because I mean, I am running like swords, but I could also be running path because that's another exile, but that's just creatures. I like the stuff that hits, you know, everything, non-land permanents basically. So I'm not sure if there's anything in green that's come out recently that I'm not thinking of that just exiles artifacts or enchantments. I feel like there is, and maybe that's something that needs to be on the considering.
Arch Druid or Arch Druid's Charm, however you want to say it. That one does, but it's triple green.
Yeah, but that's not hard to hit when you're on Gaia's, right? I'm also running True. Arbor Elf, and if I have Yavimaya out, it makes my guys into a forest, so you can tap and untap. Same with Sarah Sanctum. You know, our little old Arbor Elf can be pretty impactful with the right cards. Yeah, Archdruid, that is probably the one that we were just talking about that does an exile.
So you got crap rotation too, so yeah, I guess you could probably set that silliness up with your little Dryad Arbor all the time if you want. Huh, that's gross.
Yeah, it's not a bad interaction. All right, well, I put the Archdruid Charm on there for considering as well, because this might be the list where I actually would do it, because it is another creature tutor. It's a land tutor for your guy's cradle, like you said. It can exile an artifact or enchantment, and then it also has the +1/+1 counter on your creature that could also be its removal, but then it also, you know, goes hand in hand with the, you know, Kutzil, where now you've got a creature that's drawn you cards as well. So
that's true. I guess you do have like you're one of the few lists that has more than one busted ass land to tutor up, honestly, huh?
Well, I mean, yeah, there's Gaia's, there's the Sarah Sanctum. If you need in a pinch, you can get your Visage. You could also go and grab your Hall of Heliod's Generosity if you need it. And then, in worst case, I mean, even at the floor, you get a Yavimaya, and now all your shit's a forest, so anything you have that might be hurting you or whatever. Actually, you know what? I'm not even on, now that I'm looking at it. I'm not even on City of Brass or the other ones that hurt you. Probably because of Yasharn. But it looks like the only one I have is Horizon Canopy, which is the pay one life. And I am on fetches, but you know, you hopefully have already done your fetching there. And he kind of comes in and says, here's a forest, here's a fucking plains. You don't care about, you know, non-basics right now. And you're probably already at a point where you don't care anyway because you're paying 4 mana for the guy. So, or you're court of calling him out or whatever. So, yeah. Another thing I could consider, too, now that the list has kind of gotten heavy on legendaries, because, I mean, even, you know, Yavimaya is a legendary. Hall is a legendary. Gaia's Cradle is a legendary. Ceres is a legendary. Igonjo and Busagi were both legendary. Plus, I also have 7 legendary creatures. I might even consider putting, what's her name? Sisse?
Oh, Sisse. White-green Sisse?
Yeah, she might actually be worth putting in here now, because that's just a toolbox, like, get whatever you want. Because it'll get you land or whatever else.
Isn't there a white and 2 tutor that searches up a snow permanent or a legend or something like that?
Search for Glory. That's called. For Glory. I had it in the considering at one point, but I didn't have as many legendaries at the time because I keep selling some of these other ones. Yeah. I think I was only on like 3. I didn't realize how many legendary lands I'm running right now until just now, but I don't think any of my enchantments are legendary. Oh, yeah. Flowering the Right Tree is. That's the only one. But so there's even that. But yeah, you could also be on Urza Saga because that's what I usually do with the Search for Glory. It's like snow land, or it's snow permanent, or legendary, or saga. So you can get Urza Saga, you can go get a basic snow land, or you can go get one of your legendary creatures. But like again, at the time I wasn't running quite as many, so I didn't think about it. But that would definitely work.
I don't think you don't have enough tap abilities in here where Legolas's quick reflexes would make a ton of sense. It'd be more or less just a 1 mana give something shroud, right?
I forget what it does. Yeah. Split second.
It's like when it taps, creature. It deals damage or something.
Yeah, I don't know. This creature becomes tapped and deals damage. You can throw fire to one creature.
Yeah, I don't think you have enough in this deck that it makes sense to run that in this.
No, I don't think so.
I was going to ask, so you've had this deck for quite a while now. I know you've got in quite a few games with it. What would you say are some of its worst matchups, and what would you say are some matchups it's really strong against?
So it's bad against other stacks decks. I mean, so there is the whole like stacks decks help each other kind of deal. So like me playing, you know, these artifact hate pieces might help another stacks deck out, but it's hurt by rule of law. So like rule of law effects can kind of, because everything's so low to the ground, you're expecting to cast, you know, 1 to 2 things every single turn, pretty much, until you get to, like, maybe towards the end game where you just don't have it in hand, or you just haven't drawn an enchantment in a while to get you the card draw, or no other thing. And that's again, why some of these other pieces are in there, because in the games that I've played, there are times where, like, maybe you have, your opener is, like, land, dork, land, 1 enchantment, and then, like, interaction. And that seems fine, right? So you're like land, dork, next turn land, Sithis, next turn play enchantment. But now you're on turn 3 and that's the first time you've drawn a card, so it's kind of slow. Which isn't bad, but in that sense you'd rather be playing like turn 1 land, Root Maze, into turn 2 tapped land, dork, into turn 3, you know, tapped land, tapped whatever, you know. And it's kind of slower for you, slower for them, but like you're getting ahead, especially if you're playing dorks and they're not. But then there is now the Bowmaster meta where all of your dorks are susceptible to getting blown the fuck up. So that's also a place where the Flowering of the White Tree kind of helps with that, but not necessarily like the thing you want to tutor for.
Got it. And say, how bad has the printing of Orcish Bowmaster been for your Geralt Sithis here? Is it, do you find it gets targeted and shot off the board pretty quick?
I haven't really played this enough in the newer meta. Like we played it on stream couple weeks ago, whenever it was. I played a few games. I got a win on one of the games. The other games I didn't do a whole lot, and that's just kind of the way it is with this deck. Like I said, it can stand toe-to-toe with the top-end stuff, but it's just a real variable as if whether or not you're going to slow them down or have the right interaction at the right time, or the rest of the table is going to stop them at the right time for you to then go for a win. This does require a lot of setup to get to wins, so it's not exactly explosive. It can be explosive. You can have those storm turns out of nowhere, but it's not going to win turn 2 very, very often, if at all.
So would you say like a turbo matchup, if you don't get some kind of like anti-artifact tech down real early, or turbo matchup's kind of rough?
Yeah. I mean, because most Adnaz, it's going to be you know, turn two, turn three, the Adnaz comes down, they play a bunch of different things, and then, you know, it's kind of fucked. If you have a Root Maze down, that can help too, you know, Root Maze, the Blind Obedience, the Dauntless Dismantler, or just a straight up Oof, or Stony Silence, any of those pieces, you, or even Aura of Silence too, to a degree. If you can get any of those down to where people have to pay more, or, you know, yada, 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 like it slows them down enough to where, like, they go for an Adnaz and now they can't win because of whatever. But a lot of times with the Adnaz, you get the removal, you need to get rid of the pieces that are hurting you to where you can still go off. But, I mean, how many Adnaz have we seen, too, where people just take 25 damage and then go, well, I can't get there, and then they just sculpt their hand and pass. So, you know, it can go either way. But, yeah, it definitely... It's not as fast as some of the fastest decks in the format, and it's susceptible to, like, rule of law and anything that, you know, adds tax to. So, like, the Thorn of Amethyst or the Thalia. The Thalias and all that kind of stuff. The tax hurts a bit, because having to pay 2 mana for a dork just kind of sucks. Having to pay 2 mana for any of this stuff kind of, or an extra additional mana, just kind of sucks. It eats into what you're trying to do. So, yeah, I think those are probably its biggest weaknesses. It's strong against anything that's trying to do artifact things, though. This against an Urza, like, Urza's not too happy about all of the shit coming in tapped, you know?
For sure. Even, I wonder if, like, even, like, a Tivit deck or anything where their time sieve is just garbage.
I think this would actually be pretty strong against Tivit, considering I've played enough Tivit to know that, like, yeah, those types of things suck. Also, you're just running Dranith, so, like, you get an early Dranith down, that can turn off a lot of people's game plans. And then again, somebody plays the Tivit, and then you go, okay, here's a Darksteel, now your Tivit's an 0-1 indestructible, it does fucking nothing. It really just depends on... I feel like I know the meta well enough, and I've played against most of the top-end decks enough to know that these things are good enough. But then there's also things like, maybe I should be playing, you know, Graft Digger's Cage to hose, like, some more graveyard stuff, and you know, the types of spells that put creatures right on the field, but then I'm playing stuff like Court of Calling, so, like, that hoses me too. So, you know, there's always those considerations. Maybe I should be playing the Torpor Orb effects and all that, but that hurts some of my stuff too. Like we said, Suppression Field, that can hurt some of my stuff too. Cursed Totem would be good, but I'm running all these dorks, you know, so there's a lot of stuff I could be playing that combats popular strategies, but then if it hurts you too, is it worth it?
If they can print some asymmetrical enchantment stacks pieces, that's his lane's want list for this deck hardcore, huh?
I mean, asymmetrical stacks pieces are my want for all of my decks, because the more places I can jam stacks pieces, the happier I am. The sense of, like, you know, they're just as good as Dranith, you know, where it's just you play it and it doesn't affect you at all, and it stops so many strategies, like... Yes. I mean, everybody hates Dranith. People think that this should have never been printed, blah, 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 blah. I love it. I don't care. I play it all the time. I think it's worth it. I hate playing into it, too, just as much as the next guy, but it's not that hard to remove. It still dies to Bolt, you know? So how much complaining can you really do?
Right.
Just like everything else. I mean, Rule of Law, I think, is totally a fair strategy. It sucks when it stops you, but, you know, you got to also learn how to get past those things.
My favorite thing to do is to do the channel a Touch the Spirit Realm on a Dranith, cast my commander, then pass the turn, and it comes back, so it's there for my opponents.
Mm-hmm.
Love that shit.
Yeah, anything you can do like that is helpful. You know, and there's other stuff too. Like, I could be playing, like, Grasp of Fate, which does the same thing as kind of this Unexplained Absence, which isn't a bad card, and you're still getting card draw off of it. So there are other pieces that I could be considering. It's just been a lot of, you know, testing and going back and forth with stuff, and you know, that's just kind of how it is with any of these decks. You know, new cards get printed and you go, oh, this seems better than the other thing. Like, I'm also, you know, on a couple cards that, you know, for Sithis, like, if Sithis gets... It doesn't usually get removed that often, but people don't like you just having this easy card draw access, so they're like, fucking kill it. Kill it. And I've had it to where, you know, it cost me quite a bit to cast it. So we are running, like, Argothian Enchantress, which is still 2 mana. It has Shroud, so it can't even be targeted, and it has the same clause where you cast the enchantment, you draw a card. And I'm running an enchantment version, too, called Enchantress's Presence. It costs 3 mana, but it sticks on the board and does the same thing. And then they're just gravy if you can get them out while you also have Sithis. Then you're just drawing two or three cards at a time, and it, you know, life is good. But having backups for that is good.
You have the advantage of, I think outside of like Cyclonic Rift, there's not really a mass enchantment removal spell I can think of that you commonly run into in CDH, right?
They exist, but they're not run. There's definitely quite a few board wipes for enchantments, but there's just most decks aren't running more than a couple. And I like this because it does have that sort of uniqueness in the sense that like not a lot of people are playing a lot of enchantments, so it is kind of different in that regard. And then getting the card draw off of them is just gravy. And then also being able to play some of these weird removal pieces that just kind of sit there or shut off like a whole commander, because you're just like, oh yeah, here's a reprobation, now your commander's a coward and it does fucking nothing and you can't do anything about it unless you have a sac outlet or you want to erase the piece of removal or whatever. And most people don't. They just say, okay, I don't have my commander, and they just dirtle.
Yeah, so it probably doesn't feel great to have to cast your own Bowmaster to kill your own commander, right?
Right. Well, and then in the case of Darksteel, it's indestructible, so you can't even do that. And then they can't actually blow up the creature either with anything. They have to either exile it, or they have to put the focus on the enchantment itself. And like, who wants to Nature's Claim this thing that's on your commander when you could be hitting like something that's benefiting me? Or hitting the rest in peace, or hitting the other thing that's way more important.
I like it. Any last final thoughts on the deck?
No, I mean, I think it's in a pretty good spot. Like we said, there are some cards here that I still have on considering, and my most recent change was just removing artifacts altogether from it. I still don't know if that's a mistake. It didn't really feel that bad. I do know that initially, like, I would kind of mulligan to try and have like either a dork or a rock in my first opening hand just to have something to be doing, and not having the rocks there kind of hurts in the sense that the ones I was running were all zero drops, so like I now have to definitely spend my mana on whatever I'm doing. But it's felt more impactful in the sense of like I don't ever have to worry, outside of Walking Ballista, I don't have to worry about a single artifact where I care that, you know, these things are shutting them off. And Walking Ballista doesn't give a shit if it comes into play tapped, for the record. It just doesn't like Collector Roof or Stony Silence. So
that's totally fair.
But yeah, I mean, I'm, I think as things keep getting printed, I think there'll be more cards that consider, especially like we've said recently, it feels like white just keeps getting all these good cards. So yeah, that's always going to be stuff.
For sure.
I mean, I was even considering the Delny creature because Sithis is a two or less power. So, you know, you get that double trigger. I've considered it. But then there's just not a lot else in here that's doing that. So I was like, is it really worth it? Probably not.
Three mana, you could probably, I'm sure you could find something stronger, which is weird because that card is great. But yeah, like you said, it's got to have more than just the commander even, which is a weird world we're in, but that's where we're at. So
yeah, I feel like it wants more, like, just wants a bunch of 2/2s and 1/1s that all have like various effects that will trigger more than once.
And other bullshit. Yeah. I'm surprised you're not on Elvish Spirit Guide.
You know, it's fine, but it is a creature slot, and it's just making mana. And so, like, I run Simeon Spirit Guide in a lot of decks, but that's because Simeon Spirit Guide's good when you add Nos into it. It's just free mana. It's also just good on turn one to free mana into your more expensive commander. In this case, it's like, okay, sure, I could play a Plains and then exile it to cast Sithis turn one. Sure. I mean, that's cool. But you know how many times I've cast Sithis turn one and then somebody just goes, well, I got nothing better to do. Nobody else played anything. Just kill Sithis. And then you're like, well, fuck. Now I'm just down a card and she's up tax. And what did I get out of it? Nothing. So I don't really know that we really need to be focusing on powering her up, because she's only two mana. She comes down turn two every single game without fail unless something really bad happened. You know, so, unless it's, I played my own Root Mace and said, okay, fuck it, we're going to play her turn three instead, you know? So, I don't think it's really necessary, but it is something that you could play. And honestly, like, I've compared this to the other decks that are on the database, and I want to say initially we're all pretty close, like maybe 10 cards off, but like it's gotten to the point where we're like 30, 40 cards off of each other now, and some of them are doing weird shit with different enchantments that I'm like, I don't really like that. Most of them are not playing any of these two card win cons, which I think is a mistake. Like, why would you not play Heliod Ballista? It's just so easy to get to. You need two tutors or some card draw, and you get there. The Siona
Heliod seems like it can just feed bonkers with your incremental life gain, just making your shit big. I guess that's another way for Cutsoul to make things hit, right? For your Sithis Heliod counters.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, that works. And also, eventually, Heliod becomes a creature himself, and he's a big indestructible beater too. So, I don't see why you wouldn't run this. I could see where the Siona one is kind of less good. Shielded by Faith isn't a great enchantment. I probably wouldn't be playing it without her. That's something that could be on the chopping block at some point. Also, because Concordant Crossroads is just such a risky thing to play. So, I mean, those are things that could be on the cut, but I just liked having a couple different compact win cons just to get things done. But, you know, the overall goal is, you know, slow people down that are and have the interaction to slow down the strongest strategies in the format. And then the rest of it is just trying to advance our own game plan, get to one of those win cons or get to the infinite mana, draw your deck and go ham. It's supposed to be kind of a meta buster, anti everything, but you know what we're doing kind of deck. So, and then, you know, worst case, we get the invasion of Ikoria and kill it and turn it into whatever the fuck it's called, Zalorpa or whatever. And, Zalortha. And then, you know, make all of our creatures unblockable essentially. And just beat people up. You know, worst case, we're just like going to beats.
Sounds like I've seen that recently.
Yeah. You might have. It could be a spoiler, but will they remember? We don't know. We shall see. But hey, I think it was cool to go in depth with this. I appreciate you coming up with some questions that got the gears turning a little bit rather than just being a straight up, well, this is what my deck does. and we also have a little bit of a shorter one, so maybe we can keep some more shorter attention spans occupied for a little bit, but if you guys like this, you let us know. I have tons of decks. Kirk's got way more than I do. If there's anything that you would like to see us do a deck tech on, we can definitely do more of these. I think it was pretty fun. And I think that's all we got. You got any closing thoughts?
I do. I just have one quick closing question for anyone that's hung out with us this long. So Celestnia being not the most popular color for CEDH, what are your favorite Celestnia commanders? What other ones should we delve into and look at and possibly brew? That's what I got.
Well, I can already tell you I've brewed Elavir, which is probably a little stackier than this one. And I've also brewed Kutzil, but that was in Pauper. And that one, it's kind of fun because it's just a lot of different effects that can put 1/1 counters on your stuff so that you basically have a Timna. It's a build your own Timna in with commons, which is weird, but like it actually kind of works. Also, there's a lot of cool cards that if you were to build Kutzil, like for CDH, there's a lot of cards that do like put a 1/1 counter on fucking everything you control, which can be nice to make that build your own Timna. But then there's also quite a few cards that like give stuff that have a counter on it, like Trample or Reach or Vigilance or whatever. There's a lot of them are part of the Outlast cycle, but there's been other ones besides that. But the Outlast cycle is like it says Outlast and a cost, like pay 1 white. And then that puts a 1/1 counter on the creature itself. And then it says whatever creatures you control that have +1/+1 on them have flying or whatever. Hmm. So like if you have that and you're already giving out 1/1s to everybody, now all of a sudden you've got like a whole force of flyers or a whole force of tramplers or whatever. It's kind of a cute way to kind of spread that around. And then getting the card draw on top of it is pretty good. So I think Kutzel's pretty good, but probably still the best one is probably that Captain Sisse Joey plays because it literally just tutors up whatever the fuck you want. It's a huge toolbox and somehow wins all the damn time, even though we see it coming.
It is a pretty good one. I was looking because I know I may have somewhere in the neighborhood of 280-ish lists, I think. I don't know that I have a Celestnia brew, so that's kind of maybe my question is greedy for me. So I want to know, I want to hear people's opinions and what I should be looking at and what I might brew up next, because I always like brewing.
Yeah. Well, there you go. You've got your question for the week, month, whatever the case, and we'll see you guys in however long it is until we get the next one out, probably within a couple weeks. We just released one here recently. This one will probably come out next week, so probably end of the month, early next month maybe, we'll have another one out. Either way, until then, you guys enjoy. Hope you enjoyed listening. Leave us comments, and we'll see you next time.
Take care.